Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Despite that big snowfall and recent rains, much of Missouri and Kansas remain in the grips of unrelenting drought. The drought is impacting yields and ultimately affecting food prices. Today we'll get an update on just what's going on out there and how it will affect you in the amount you pay for the food you eat. Here's a hint, it may not be as bad as you think, at least in some cases. Later on this hour, the biggest change to hit the railroad industry in decades. Here's one more hint. It has to do with alternative fuels. But first, how the drought affects you. Our guests today are Julian Binfield. He's with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri. Jules, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thanks very much for having me.
Frank Morris is also here. He's KCUR's news director and has reported extensively on the drought here in the Midwest. Frank, always good to have
you, Steve.
Too. Well, Frank, as I said, you've done a lot of reporting on all the drought, which is off a lot of people's radar screens in the wake of all this snow and rain we've had in the last month. So is the drought over?
Well, no. I mean, in a word, no.
Unfortunately.
And, yeah. and that's true in Missouri, where the drought has diminished considerably since the remnants of Hurricane Isaac came through and dumped 5 inches of rain over much of the state. But in western Kansas, I mean, some places didn't even get the snow, but places that got 2 feet of snow, you know, roughly equivalent to 2 inches of rain. Well, so they need to recharge the soil. They need about 8 inches of rain. So 8 feet of snow would get them somewhere. And that's not talking about how far they are behind in terms of the deficit, the amount of precipitation they normally get. That's more like 12 feet of snow.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it helps, and it's really good for the wheat crop. It comes at a key time. A lot of this wheat was just sitting in the dry ground and was going to be activated. It's dormant over the winter, hard red winter wheat. And when it started trying to grow, when it warms up, it's going to start to try to grow. And if there's no moisture, it just starts dying. So,
you know, you were out there last summer in western Kansas, Frank. Just how dry was it? What did you see out there?
Well, I mean, The image that really sticks with me, I guess, Steve, is that I'm out on this guy's ranch, and he's this old fellow born in the Dust Bowl, and he says, you know, I've never seen buffalo grass die.
I remember you reporting that.
So he's there. He's seen this. He's been working with this stuff his entire life. He grew up on the ranch. It's you know, he's been there his entire life, and he's never seen this grass. And I went and talked to an agronomist and said, oh, well, no, buffalo grass doesn't die. It just does not die. It might look dead, but I trust the old rancher guy who get down on his hands and knees and say, look, it's dead. You know, this stuff is dead.
Wow.
It's native, tough grass. And if it's dead, I mean, you know, you're in bad shape.
So. Generally speaking, Frank, my sense was that all of this hit Kansas harder than Missouri. Am I right about that?
Yeah. You know, I think it was very, very bad in Missouri early in the year. And so it did a lot of damage to – but, you know, it's relative because Missouri is wetter normally than Kansas. And eastern Kansas is a lot wetter than western Kansas. So – It's been in Kansas. It's going on 3 years in parts of western Kansas.
Yeah,
and you know Missouri's or Nebraska's even worse. Oklahoma's been going through this for a long time. West Texas, but yeah, and it's still. I mean, it is about as bad as it gets. You know, in terms of ranking these things, it is still dark brown in terms of, you know, the ranking on the drought monitor out in western Kansas, and Missouri is largely cleared up, and it was shorter lived in Missouri, but you know the timing was lousy for the corn and soybeans.
And we'll talk in just a little bit the prospects for this summer. You know, ain't getting much better from based on what I'm seeing and what I'm reading here. Well, Jules Binfield from MU, what have you noticed around Missouri? How are farmers and ranchers handling all the dry conditions? Just what have you noticed?
Well, generally, I think it's going to be important over the next few months what happens with weather in terms of how people can handle the things that are coming. The impact of the drought, obviously, we all saw that on corn, but really the livestock producers as well are suffering. You have to remember that there was a big drop in pasture quality hay availability, and I think there's a potential for the changes that the drought impacts that occurred last year to spill over into this year in terms of availability for feed for those guys too.
There is kind of a lag effect here that works not only with what you just described, Jules, but also with food prices. Right, there's a number of months go by before consumers might begin to feel some impact here.
Well, that's right. Probably there's two aspects to that. I think. One is with the increase in cereal prices, corn prices tend to drag up wheat prices that can get reflected in stores in terms of cost of bread or other things. Usually the transmission of those prices is fairly small because it's a small part of the overall cost of the product. But also stores might have pricing strategies and it may take a while for them to feed through. Also in the livestock sector, these increasing feed prices will probably inevitably get passed on to food prices, but that can take a while. I mean, when pasture quality is reduced, when hay availability goes down, people may respond by slaughtering their animals. That may increase the supply of some of these meats and push down prices in the short run, but delay the impact on meat prices to the longer run.
So basically, you're saying that so far, consumers haven't noticed much of an impact, even though last summer's drought was just horrific, at least in some parts of the country.
If you look at the overall inflation figures, the inflation rate for food itself has been running higher than general inflation at 3% rather than 2%. The drought would have played a part in that. But really, for overall food prices, other things have also contributed to that: higher costs of marketing, fuel costs of transportation. So in terms of overall food prices, consumers probably haven't seen the impact of the drought. Now, in products which are relatively low processed, then the price impacts can be passed on, like milk. People have probably seen their milk prices more volatile than they pay for like a bag of chips, for example.
Yeah. Maybe we need a quick primer, Jules, on why food costs what it does, because you say that in the U.S., the actual cost of most food is actually accounted for by stuff other than the basic commodity. So the impact of the increasing corn price on, say, a bag of chips winds up being very small. Help me with that. What do you mean exactly?
Well, if you think of an example of corn chips or whatever, the impact of the drought on actual corn prices has been to increase them. And in August, we were looking at corn prices of over $8, whereas historically we may have been looking at $2 or $4. But if you think about actually how much corn is in a bag of chips, it's a very small amount.
Well, you're shattering my image of corn chips. I thought they say corn chips on the label. You're saying there's not much corn in my corn chips.
I mean, in terms of the
price. The price of the corn is infinitesimal compared to the price of marketing and processing and doing all that stuff. So it's mainly made of corn and oil, but that corn is so cheap that you don't notice it if it goes up, if it doubles in price.
That's right. And what I mean to say is, in a bag of chips, there's only a few cents worth of corn in there. So if the price of corn doubles, then it potentially doesn't add too much to a bag of chips. Now, it's different for a gallon of milk, for example. Then you're going to see prices pass through into the final price.
But when they come, so much other stuff in a gallon of milk as there are other factors in a bag of chips.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that begins to explain it. And what else accounts? Give us a little crash course here on food prices. What else should we be thinking about here?
Well, as I said, in recent years, I think that that food prices have outstripped the general inflation rate for a number of years now. Some of that has in recent years was due to the drought. Some of it's due to higher commodity prices, but also we've had oil prices have increased as well. It increases the cost of transportation and also the cost of marketing, advertising, those kind of costs associated with food. So when you look at the overall food bill, a large proportion of which is taken up by more processed foods than basic raw agricultural commodity products, I think those things have been some of the reason why the prices have outstripped inflation, and they've only outstripped them by a couple of percent or whatever.
But still, over a course of a number of years, Jules, you're saying this trend has continued where food prices are outstripping the general inflation rate. That can begin to add up after a while, though, right?
I think so, yeah. I don't want to suggest – I know people out there have noticed higher prices, and in the middle of a recession, people are having tough times and their food bill has gone up, and I don't want to diminish the impact that's had on people's budgets. Even a few percent increase in food can definitely make things difficult for people. But all I'm saying is, you can't draw a straight line from doubling corn prices through to a similar impact on food prices.
We're talking about, at least so far, things that come out of the ground, but the pressure to raise prices when it comes to livestock, that could be even more profound, right?
Well, if you look at the trends in recent years, then the increases in prices of meat have outstripped some of the other products that are in that food basket where they calculate the inflation. As I said, what we've seen this year in terms of beef, for example, the beef producers, cattle producers have had a very tough time. The cow herd has been dropping for the last few years. So that means that even next year, let's say we have a really good harvest and we see corn prices drop, feed prices drop, as we're expecting them to see in our latest outlook here, then it's going to take a while for beef producers to turn around beef production. We're not looking at slaughtering going up until 2015, for example. So it's very difficult for beef producers, even when margins recover, to increase beef production, and that's the only thing that will bring beef prices down in the U.S.
Because they've gone in and sort of cut their production. It's like they're killing some of the little calf factories in order to get them up because they can't afford to feed them. So they have cows that they would like to keep and have them keep producing year after year. They've had to kill some of those cows because they can't afford to feed them because their pastures aren't growing and hay is cost twice as much as it did a couple of years ago, and corn is high. So there's no good economic alternative other than culling the herd, even though prices are, you know, get depressed when you have to do that. So the you know, ground level production capability of the U.S. herd is diminished because of the drought. So you're going to see prices go up. It's same in the hog industry. That's how that's likely to play out. So yeah, again, prices drop and then prices will rise again probably next year.
And so the impact when it comes to livestock prices, a hamburger, the money you pay for a steak, Frank, you're saying that could be boosted more so even than things coming out of the ground.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I think meat is more volatile price wise. Commodities are very volatile, but again, you know, you have a direct connection there. You're not buying meat that is, you know, turned into pepperoni and put on a pizza, and you know, I mean, that's kind of the analogy you'd have to use. It's a direct connection with the price of the beef, although there are mitigating factors there.
Yeah. Well, if you want to join our conversation, we'd like to have you. If you're a rancher, a farmer, or other person who's been affected by the drought, give us a call, 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedat kcur.org, or you can tweet us at kcur. Up to date. You know, Frank, the forecast for this year is for the drought not only to continue, but to actually intensify. I've seen different things on this, but obviously that is not real happy news for a lot of folks in Kansas and Missouri.
Definitely not. I mean, you know, again, if you, you know, our mutual friend, Eric Neal, who's got a little dairy operation, he's very happy right now because he's going to get a good crop of grass. But without the moisture deep down in the soil, I mean, you have the soil depleted down, you know, 4 feet or so, depending on how deep the soil is. It's down to dry dust underneath this little layer of moisture that just came in.
Wow.
If you can't replenish that, you don't have any backup. I mean, we're operating now. Farmers are operating in this area, broadly the whole upper Midwest or around here, on a very, very thin margin. They don't have any support and have nothing in the bank as far as moisture in the soil. So that it is kind of hand to mouth. And that long-term forecast is ugly, but I don't think that long-term forecast said we were going to get 2 feet of snow and then a big, big rain either. So, mm-hmm. You know, you never know.
Well, you wonder what another year of severe weather will do, Jules, but there's also some contradictory information out there. Just last month, the USDA released its annual outlook for the coming growing season, and as you mentioned, forecasted record or near-record production of corn and soy, two of the crops hit hardest by last year's summer drought. How can that be? How can one set of weather forecasters be predicting all heck to break out, and the USDA is saying records ahead?
Well, I think what the USDA do and what we do in our own outlook is for this year to assume that we get to a return to what would be normal weather or a return to trend yields. I mean, it's too early now, I think, to make a definitive call or whether the drought's going to continue and whether it's not. So I think in both their projections and ours, we assume that we return to trend yield. That means a big increase in corn. We've got near record corn areas, I think, both for us and for the USDA for this year. And that would lead to an awful lot of corn that would push prices down. Now,
but that won't happen if the drought continues in the same way it did last summer, right?
That's correct. And one of the impacts of this year's drought is that our flexibility has been eroded somewhat in the sense that stocks of corn have been pulled down because of the drop in production this year. People have taken corn out of stocks and used it. So they're very low. So that means that if there was a similar drought this year as last year, then we'd probably see higher prices. You know, there's a great deal of uncertainty as to what's going to happen this year. If we had a really good corn year, there'd be an awful lot of corn because we've got a lot of area and could push prices down. In both the USDA and for us, we have prices going down $2 a bushel, which would be the biggest drop, I think, in a year. They could fall further than that. But if you have a drought with the stocks levels that they are, then you could see the opposite happen and relatively high prices. So it's very uncertain. I think neither us or the USDA say we know what's going to happen to corn prices this year because it's so volatile.
Well, part of the deal too, Steve, is that productivity, it keeps going up and up and up. You know, you're getting more and more corn off of an acre, you know, all things being equal, much, much more than you were just 10 or 15 years ago. The corn plants grow closer together. They produce more corn. You know, agriculture is really on a fast acceleration in terms of productivity. And that's part of the reason that honestly, you know, even when, you know, food prices, we have almost record-breaking, worst drought in 50 years, you barely notice a bump in food prices. It's because the system is so darn efficient to begin with.
Well, you wonder, what's a farmer to do out there, Frank, if you hear the USDA forecast for record production coming up this year? You hear other weather forecasters saying the drought's not only going to continue, it's going to get worse. What does a farmer do with that information?
Well, I mean, I think the farmer has a much more specific situation. You know, they've got their 2,000 acres in south central Kansas or whatever, and those big projections just kind of play on the prices that they're likely to get, but they don't speak to your individual situation. I mean, and that differs dramatically across. I mean, you look at these maps, the drought monitor map, and you'll see it seems like pretty fine detail. But within that, there are little areas that are, you know, in bad drought areas. There was one just north here by the Nebraska line that got great rain. They had a huge corn harvest this year with no irrigation. And then within that, too, are these places where the rain just keeps missing them. So it's a very, wow, very individual and a really kind of heartbreaking situation for a lot of people. If, you know, you miss the rain and then you miss another rain, and then pretty soon you're in serious jeopardy.
Let me get our listeners involved here. Are food prices going up at the grocery store? Are you noticing those changes? And what products are affected most? 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. We're talking about the drought and its impact in both Kansas and Missouri. We're visiting with Julian Binfield. He's with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute over at MU. And Frank Morris, he's a news director here at KCUR. You know, you just wonder about sort of the mood and the ability of these farmers to continue on in western Kansas, Frank, if they face one more tough summer. I imagine you came across some pretty discouraged people when you were out driving around last year.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, farmers tend to be pretty old and people don't just go off and start a farm in western Kansas. You know, you grow into it. Your father did it. Your grandfather did it. So they take a long view, a lot of them, and they, you know, they're in it for the long haul. There's not really alternatives, you know, if you're gonna stay in the business.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, but as I was saying just a second ago, you know, people who miss those rains, it starts to feel like, you know, things are just against them. And I talked to a guy, a wheat farmer out in south central Kansas, who was just so delighted. He's an older guy out shoveling 2 feet of snow. He said he had a smile on his face the whole time he was doing it because, you know, this is like lifeblood, you know, for them. And so, yeah, it gets it gets grating. And I think it's for us here, you know, where, you know, we notice our lawn is dry or something. That's not really a lot of skin in the game. If it's your livelihood and thing you've been building for, you know, generations, then it starts to be a pretty heavy weight on you when, you know, that looks like it could be going away, and you don't see, you know, there's no end in sight necessarily.
And just for the record, I've got a little skin in the game. I've been fixing a lot of cracks in my drywall at home the last few weekends. That's been how I've been spending my time, the impact of the drought on my house. Yeah. You know, Jules, we haven't talked a whole lot about the impact on the biofuel industry and production there. I'm thinking about ethanol and that industry. What's happening?
Well, another impact of the drought has been that by pushing corn prices up, it's made ethanol relatively less profitable to produce. So there's been some reduction in ethanol production here from corn in the U.S. In the past,
the industry just hasn't taken off as people sort of thought it might one day, right?
Well, I think no, I wouldn't say that. I'd say that people have been aware that there's going to be a problem here with the blend wall coming up in front of us, where it's very difficult at the moment to sell ethanol beyond the 10% of fuel. Prior to now, it's been profitable to do that. And so we've actually been producing more ethanol than has been mandated by the government. But I think everybody knew that we were going to reach a point around now that where it's going to be tough to sell ethanol, and that's what, and we're reaching that with the mandate now. One of the impacts of the drought is that in previous years, by producing more than the mandate, people have built up a stock of credits that they can use. Now, with production dropping, those stock of credits has dropped. And now, in trying to sell ethanol beyond E10, the cost of doing that has surged. And the cost of these RINs, which are really an indicator of the cost of incorporating ethanol into higher blends, has really surged. And that's, you've seen that those in the last couple of weeks surge to incredibly high levels.
And when you say stock of credits, you mean what exactly, Jules?
Well, in order to meet the mandate, blenders have to show that they've incorporated renewable fuels in their fuel, and they can get a credit for doing that. If they produce more than the mandate, then you can build up a stock of credits. You still get the credit, but you can use that in subsequent years. So that gives a bit of flexibility to the system. The idea is that if we have a year with drought, then there's some flexibility there. But what's happened with the drought is that we've had people using up these stock of credits to meet their obligation to incorporate renewable fuel at the same time as we're running up against this blend wall. And so the flexibility in the system has dramatically been reduced.
All right. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about the drought. We'll talk a little bit in our second half about the story of what's happening in other countries. We read of food unrest, unrest over food prices and all kinds of issues. We'll get an update on that. And later on this hour, the biggest change to hit the railroad industry in decades. That'll be our topic later on this hour. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed Friday's look at documentary, independent, and foreign films playing on area screens, you can find those and other previous broadcasts at kcur.org. On tomorrow's program, we examine who stole the American dream with best-selling author Hedrick Smith, plus a conversation with composer, actor, and author Tom Sullivan on how blindness never seemed to keep him from his goals. Well, our main segment today, we're talking about the drought, the impact on food prices, and what might be happening this year. Our guest today, Julian Binfield, he's with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute over at MU. And Frank Morris, he's KCUR's news director. He's also with Harvest Public Media. He's reported extensively on the drought in the Midwest. Our phone number here again, 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Well, Jules, we haven't talked much about the story in other countries, which is a little bit different. We read even of unrest over food prices, something you don't see much of in this country. What about that? What do you see happening around the globe when it comes to the cost of food?
Well, in our example earlier, we talked about corn, and we were saying that the cost of corn in a bag of chips is only a few cents. So when the corn price goes up, you may not see it at the store here. But we also have a project with people in South Africa, and I was over talking to them. They were making a presentation. And in South Africa, if you look at the poorest members of the community there, those people may be only earning a couple of dollars a day. They may be spending a lot of that on food. And a lot of them, their basic staple will be cornmeal. And obviously, if you're buying bags of cornmeal, then the price of corn makes up a big chunk of that. And they've seen, since 2006, the prices of those bags double. So if you're paying, spending maybe half your income on those and the price of those doubles, then you're seeing a huge impact on the on your overall standard
of
living.
And the price is doubling because of what, drought conditions there too?
Well, no. The price spikes this year are due to the drought in the U.S. So you have a drought in the U.S., you take all this production. I mean, the drop in production in the U.S. Because of the drought was probably something over 3 billion bushels. And that's like taking a big country, like taking Brazil or taking the EU and Ukraine out of corn production. So even though South Africa's a long way away from here, and even though corn producers in South Africa might be producing a lot of corn, the fact that you have drought here has led to the price of their staple doubling. Now, there's other things in the past few years that have been driving prices up. Biofuels is one. Higher incomes in Asian countries or developing countries have pushed up the general level of commodities. But it was drought that led to this extra spike. So I was there in August at the height of when people were concerned about the drought here, and people were very worried there as to what happens. You know, even in a country like South Africa, which doesn't have immediate stability problems, then it's a concern when the price of your staple is doubling. But a similar thing has happened to bread prices in other countries, and that has really, I think, has fed into some of the unrest.
And so what kind of unrest do you see then? What do we see happening as a result of the cost of food?
Well, I don't think that the cost of food itself, I don't think, has led to the kind of widespread unrest that you've seen in countries in North Africa. But I think if there's already some political problems going on, then it causes problems for those governments. You know, some of the North African governments will subsidize bread consumption, for example. And when the price of grains goes up, then the cost of that increases. So they have to decide then, do we put the price of bread up or do we incur this huge cost? And putting the price of bread up can add to, if people are already upset, then obviously doubling or increasing the price of bread for those people can contribute a little bit. And I think there's been speculation that especially in the kind of Arab Spring uprising, then there was some contribution of higher food prices to those kind of disputes.
I was going to say there's a series of essays out from the Center for American Progress and the Center for Climate and Security in Washington that argued that climate change had a definite impact on the Arab Spring. And Andrew Guzman, a law professor at the University of California, Berkeley, he's author of the book Overheated, The Human Cost of Climate Change, says that historically big droughts were far apart, maybe as much as 100 years between them. Now, he writes, they happen often and they have global impact. Future conflicts, he says, will be caused by or become worse because of climate change. So all of this sort of tying together.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're still uncertain as to the impact that climate change is going to have on agriculture. And some areas might benefit, and you might see increases in production there. You might see lower water availability that decreases production elsewhere. But I think most people agree that you do have an increase in the variability of weather, and this can lead to big swings like that which happened with the drought. And big swings in prices and volatility in prices leads to uncertainty, and I guess that can contribute to unrest too.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Brad from Prairie Village. Brad, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was just thinking about the cost of energy as a part of fighting the drought. All these irrigation pumps that are off the electrical grid are still having to burn propane or diesel fuel. They're going to have to fertilize, and that's the dropping price of natural gas is going to make nitrogen fertilizer available, because it's pretty much natural gas. One of the things I've noticed is that a gallon of milk and a pound of hamburger just almost directly track the price of a gallon of gasoline.
Hmm. Any thoughts on that, Jules?
Well, one of the reasons why we've seen commodity prices at a higher level the last few years than we have historically has been partly in due to an increase in the oil price. So the oil price can increase the demand for, say, corn from ethanol, but also it tends to drag up energy prices and increase the price of inputs in general. So input prices have been increasing too. And that, when input prices drive up, they tend to drive up corn prices and also on for meat and dairy. If you increase the price of those inputs, then you have a reduction in production that would tend to push up prices in meat and dairy too. So there is some correlation, but I think it's often overdone.
Brad brings up another point, too, that the increasing irrigation, because it's hot. I mean, these people who can irrigate are going to irrigate anyway, probably, because they're over a nice water source like the Ogallala Aquifer. And that is has dropped pretty significantly in the last couple of years to the point where it's, you know, there are places going offline, kind of on the fringes, places where the aquifer wasn't that terrific to begin with. They're not able to pump enough water quick enough to run a big circle irrigation anymore in some places out in western Kansas, for instance. So that's the drought's having an effect on that aquifer too, which is basically paleo water, or, you know, it's water mining. You're taking water out of a resource that recharges very, very slowly under normal conditions.
You get a sense, Frank, that this story of the Ogallala Aquifer, which means very little to most folks out here in eastern Kansas, but the potential impact on the state of Kansas if that thing continues to drop is extraordinary, I think.
I believe you're right, because the whole economy out there depends on it. And, you know, it's not just agriculture. I mean, there's a lot of meat production, you know, a lot of slaughterhouses and things. That requires water. Of course, the ethanol plants require a fair amount of water. There's some ethanol plants out there. And there's the corn, just producing the corn that fuels the ethanol plants. So, I mean, yes, as that aquifer dries up, and it varies substantially from place to place. Nebraska is a huge resource. I mean, it's going to last for hundreds of years, probably, even at the rate we're depleting it. But in parts of western Kansas, I mean, it is going away.
It's a different story.
And so you don't lose it all at once. And in fact, some places have been rising, but other places have been dropping by, you know, 15 feet a year. Mm-hmm. So but it's not like, you know, the last drop is gone and then it's gone all over. It slowly evaporates or slowly diminishes around the state.
You know, Jules, our caller, Brad, his whole point that the cost of gasoline, you can sort of track that through the cost of milk and the cost of hamburger. Does that make any sense to you? Is there a correlation?
Yeah. I think so. I
mean, Brad's portraying it.
A lot of people will put up a chart of the basic commodity price and oil prices or gasoline prices, and there is some correlation between them. But it's not a direct one-to-one. And you can see if you do put a chart like that over a few years, there are periods when they don't exist. So if you look at milk prices, for example, this year, oil prices didn't really – gasoline prices weren't really correlated necessarily to milk over the course of the year. You know, both prices have been pulled up by the same factors, you know, growing incomes in Asian countries, good demand for both products.
Yeah.
But you can have weather shocks or whatever that can lead to them not following each other closely.
You know, just a final point on the new farm bill, Frank, if there is one, because Congress is obviously struggling to pass one, and how this will affect farmers in our region. I know the Senate last year passed a five-year, $500 billion farm bill that slashed subsidy payments in favor of new crop insurance programs. Mm-hmm. Is that the direction Congress seems to be heading in, just in a real general sort of sense of things?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they got, you know, there's sort of broad agreement across the farm community that direct payments, these old subsidies, need to go. You don't need price supports anymore, in large part because of biofuels lifting the prices of commodities. So those weren't paying out anyway. Crop insurance is kind of what everybody likes. It's, you know, again, there's skin in the game, but it's subsidized three different ways by the government. So it's a very, very good deal for farmers. And in fact, we had near record incomes with the drought last year because of the huge payouts from crop insurance. So crop insurance is kind of the catch-all, the big catch-all farm program these days.
And maybe the way the next farm bill is going to be shaped and directed here going forward.
I think that's almost beyond question.
Yeah, okay. Well, Julian Binfield will explain the full impact of the 2012 drought on the American dinner table as part of the series On Dry Land, the 2012 Drought and U.S. Food Prices, presented by the Mid-Continent Public Library. You have two chances to hear him this afternoon at the Colburn Road Branch at 2 o'clock. Or this evening at the North Independence Branch at 6:30. You can find a link for more information on our webpage, kcur.org. And Jules, so good to have you here. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks very much for having me.
And Frank, always good to have you too.
Thanks, Steve.
That's Frank Morris, KCUR's news director.